A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Thanks so much for tuning in to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Hope that you had a great weekend and an even better Monday morning. If you are a Virginia gun owner, chances are, no matter how bad your weekend might have been, your Monday morning was pretty good because we saw House Bill 961, which is Governor Ralph Northam's gun ban, magazine ban, suppressor ban, trigger activator ban, basically die in committee today. Now, it's not officially killed. The Senate Judiciary Committee ended up voting to have the State Crime Commission take a look at this measure, but it does mean that House Bill 961 is done for this year, and that is very good news. Dave Adams of the Virginia Shooting Sports Association was in the room this morning as the members of the Senate Judiciary Committee voted to refer this legislation over to the Crime Commission rather than advance it to the floor of the State Senate. But as Dave told me, this is good news. Don't get me wrong. But gun owners are not out of the woods yet. Governor Northam still has a couple of things that he could do to try to move a gun ban forward. Take a look and a listen. Dave, thank you for coming on the program, sir, and congratulations to you. And really, I mean, so many tens of thousands of Virginia gun owners, Second Amendment supporters, who not only showed up at their, you know, county supervisors meetings for Second Amendment sanctuary resolutions, but they were there at the Capitol for not just lobby day, but for all of these committee hearings. House Bill 961, Governor Northam's gun ban, magazine ban, ammunition suppressor ban, trigger activator ban, is done for the year, correct?
That is correct, and thanks for having me back, Cam. They decided to pass it by for the year and send a letter to the Crime Commission to study the issue.
Okay. So the Crime Commission, which, by the way, it's interesting. I mean, the Crime Commission has already looked at Governor Northam's proposals, including this gun ban. They did that after the special session in the summer. What they found was that, well, there was really no evidence to support the effectiveness of such a ban. So as far as the Crime Commission goes, do you see them coming out with a favorable recommendation for this bill at some point?
I don't, but you never want to say never.
That's true.
The bill, 961, was so poorly drafted. It went through several iterations to try to make it palatable to even members of the House. And what ended up today was the Senate Judiciary Committee, thanks to four Democrats joining the GOP members, saying that, you know, we've passed a lot of gun bills this session. This one is just not ready for prime time yet. And in the end, they decided to carry the bill over for the year.
Not ready for prime time yet. That's a little concerning. And again, I mean, we know that we've got a Democrat majority in both chambers. That includes, you know, all of these committees. We saw four Democrat senators join with Republicans to send this bill to the Crime Commission, including the committee chair, John Edwards. Then you had Craig Deeds. You had Senator Chad Peterson. And then Senator Surville actually voted to send this to the Crime Commission as well. That was I was a little bit surprised by that, Dave, just because I anticipated that he would be one of those Democrats trying to amend this bill and try to make it more palatable for Senate Democrats.
Yeah, I was surprised by that vote, too. And that doesn't mean that he is opposed to banning modern sporting rifles or banning magazines that hold a certain number of rounds. Mm-hmm. I think it was an indication that he didn't think this bill, with all of the trouble that it had in the House, and I mean, they peppered, it was a Republican that peppered Delegate Levine this morning on the different variations of the bill and kept focusing on the fixed magazine in centerfire pistols and the definition of an assault weapon, as well as the court case, the Fourth Circuit. It became more and more clear that they tried to draw this bill as close to the Hogan case that the Fourth Circuit found constitutional as they could, thinking that, hey, if we do that, it's constitutional, we don't have anything to worry about, and it just was not a pretty sight.
No, it wasn't. And I'll be honest with you. I live in the country, as you know, Dave, and I was having such a hard time streaming that video today. I don't know if it was my internet connection, if it was the number of people that were trying to access the stream, or maybe both. But I'm listening in, like, you know, 20-second chunks to this committee hearing this morning. From what I could hear from Delegate Levine, as well as supporters like Lori Haas, this was a very emotional argument. You talk about the Republicans having a lot of these technical questions about what this bill would do, and here, what about this definition? I think Lori Haas just said, you care more about hardware than you do about kids if you don't vote for this bill.
That's exactly right, as well as one of the other proponents that got up there, a father of a victim of the Virginia Tech shooting.
A handgun was used in that shooting, it should be noted.
That's exactly right. And so what those folks are doing, they're addressing the magazine part of that. Is because they can't address the rifles, because the rifles aren't used in that many crimes. Mm-hmm. Sure, they've been used in a relative handful of mass shootings. That's not mine. You know, that's the FBI says they're rare. The Secret Service says they're rare. So they're focusing on the magazine size that was used in the Virginia Tech shooting, as well as Virginia Beach. That's the same passionate argument that Secretary of Public Safety Glenn Moran made in the House committee two Fridays ago. That's the tack they decided to use. Delegate Levine tried to do that as best he could. God, I hope the next time this bill comes up, he's a patron again.
Well, I can tell you, I won't say who told me this, but when this bill was first introduced, before any, you know, committee hearing had ever been held, one of my legislative contacts there in Richmond said it was a good sign that Levine was the sponsor of this bill because, quote, he couldn't pass a bill giving blankets to orphans, was the phrase that was used. That Delegate Levine does not have a lot of friends there in the legislature. I think the fact that it did pass out of the House, that it went over to committee, shows that, look, even though, you know, legislators, Delegate Levine might not be the favorite of his fellow lawmakers, Democrats did want to get this to Governor Northam's desk. I mean, they really were committed to trying to pass every piece of his anti-gun agenda.
Yes, that's exactly right. And the Secretary of Public Safety was checking them off as they were, you know, passing out of committee and off the floor. And this was the last check mark. And today, thanks to those four members of the State Senate Judiciary Committee, that check mark is not going to be there, at least for right now.
All right. So let's talk about what happens next, both with House Bill 961 and then some of the other gun bills that have moved out of their house of origin. The House Bill 961 is done for the year, but that doesn't mean that Ralph Northam couldn't still try to play some games here to get his gun ban in another bill.
That's correct. They've already started the game of amending legislation to fit what passed out of the particular House that is now considering it. For instance, the one gun a month bill that passed the House does not include the exemption for concealed handgun permit holders like the Senate bill. The Senate bill was heard in committee on Friday of last week.
Over in the House side.
Over on the House side. So they are already amending bills to look like they passed out of the House. So when they go back to the Senate will either concur, which means that it'll pass and go on to the governor, or they will insist on their version, and then it'll go back over to the House, and if the House insists on what they did, then they go to a conference committee. And conference committees are held behind closed doors. You don't have the members of the public in there. You know, lobbyists do talk to legislators. They try to make their case for what they'd like to see come out. But in the end, they can rewrite a bill in conference, and then it goes, and it's just a simple majority vote onto the floor. It doesn't go back to committee or anything.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, so this is something to keep in mind, because as you say, it wasn't just with the Lost or Stolen Bill. I believe that every Senate bill, every Senate gun control bill, and a lot of those were watered down in the Senate Judiciary Committee. They have been, when they got over to the House side, the first thing that I believe is House Public Safety Committee did was they changed that all of those bills back to the House versions. And so, as you say, now there is that dispute between the Senate and the House versions. And I, you know, I wonder, Dave, if these four Democrat state senators, Senator Edwards, Senator Adeed, Senator Peterson, and Senator Linwood Lewis, if they don't still hold the key to what these bills eventually are going to do here in the legislature.
Then it will come down to whether they are more interested in seeing the underlying bill pass, say, let's say one gun a month, and if they amend that to add language to also include assault weapons, whether they would say, okay, that's a bridge too far, I'm going to vote against the entire bill, or do they go ahead and vote for it because the underlying bill was the one gun a month. It's anybody's guess, because they all voted for one gun a month. In committee and on the Senate floor. In fact, there were only two bills that did not get out of the Senate that got out of the House. One of them was the access, minor access bill, and thanks to Senators Deeds and Peterson, that didn't even get out of committee. And then on the floor, they killed the bill that had to do, what was the bill they killed? It was the last day of the Senate.
Oh, Lost or Stolen.
Lost or Stolen, yeah. And so on that one, it was Linwood Lewis and Senator Peterson that voted against it.
That's right. Yeah, that was Senate Bill 67, I believe. So where are we now in terms of the timing, Dave? I mean, we've had that crossover deadline. We've got a 60-day session. We've already reached we're past the halfway point now. So, and there are a lot of other bills to consider beyond the gun control bills. Are you hearing anything that might indicate – these bills could get caught up in the last minute crush of legislative deadlines here?
No, I don't think so. In fact, the House has already, they took up three bills on Friday. They've indicated they'd like to finish their business by this coming Friday's meeting. I haven't seen the docket yet, only because I haven't checked the system, but the Public Safety Subcommittee could have bills on their committee tomorrow, or they may just hear them in full committee, because they had a 10-minute meeting last Friday. There was very little comment on the bills that were before the committee. They came in, took up the bills, made a substitute, introduced the substitutes and accepted them, said if there's anybody who didn't have a chance to comment on these when they left the House, you're welcome to speak. Other than that, it was, vote, report them out, and go to the next bill. The Senate has not heard any of the other bills yet other than 961. There was one other bill that was on the committee docket this morning, and that has to do with the locking up the firearms in family day homes while they're in use. That like daycare, home daycare centers or home adult care centers, that type of thing. But the House's version of one gun a month, universal background checks,
firearms preemption.
And the firearms preemption, as well as the minors access to firearms and the lost or stolen, it did not come up on the docket today. They could do it on Wednesday or they could do it next Monday.
Okay. All right. So still lots of reasons for gun owners to stay involved, to keep in contact with their lawmakers. This was a big win for gun owners today, but the fight certainly does continue.
That's exactly right. And please, everybody, please contact the for Democrats that voted with the Constitution and voted with gun owners today and thank them for their vote. They've been getting pounded, and it's partly their own fault they're getting pounded, but they did stand up for what was right today. And so please let Senator Sorovel, Peterson, Deeds, and Edwards know that you are thankful for the way they voted today and that you support the action they took. Because I'll tell you, Lori Haas was giving Cray Deeds an earful outside of the committee room this afternoon of the vote was taken this morning.
Well, I saw a tweet from one of the reporters there who said, I think it was Senator Louise Lucas, called those Democrats wimps. For voting against the bill and voting to send it to the crime commission. So they're not just getting grief from gun control advocates. They're getting grief from members of their own caucus as well. And I imagine that Governor Northam's office is probably going to have some pretty choice words behind closed doors for these senators.
I'm sure they will. I think the Secretary of Public Safety had a sense of what was going to happen when he walked in, because he made the comment when he spoke to those of us on, quote, lobbyist row this morning, that he was hoping to change some minds. So I think he had a sense of what the committee was planning to do when he walked in. And I'm sure the governor is going to take some folks to the woodshed. But for right now, they need to hear from gun owners that we're thankful for what they did.
Absolutely. Can you talk a little about the scene there this morning? I saw some pictures. As I said, I was trying to stream the video. Saw you speaking during the 5 minutes that each side got, and only 5 minutes that each side got for testimony. But what was the atmosphere like in the room? It seemed like there were far more Second Amendment supporters than gun ban advocates there in that room.
That's correct, and there were a lot more of them out in the hallway that could not get in. And I will say that Senator Edwards was very courteous in allowing folks going over that original 5 minutes, because the proponents of the bill went over the 5 minutes. So he immediately added an extra minute to our side when we got up to speak, and then he allowed some folks to go beyond even that before he finally cut it off, because the members knew what they were going to do. It was clear Crady had the motion ready. He wanted to get it over with and get on with the rest of the docket, which was very long this morning. It was just an absolute great turnout. People started arriving there as early as 6:30 this morning, because they knew what happened on the 13th of January, that if you were there by 7 o'clock, you still didn't get into the room.
Yeah.
So they were there. They turned out. Gun owners were great, and they were polite, and I don't think they had any idea what was going to happen. We got some word over the weekend that this was what was going to happen. And, of course, we kept that close hold, because you never knew what was going to happen between the time you get that information and the time the committee meeting comes in. But, they had no sense really of what was going to happen. And they were very happy, very ecstatic. And I mean, the media, as a lot of the people left the room after the bill was voted on, the media followed them out. So it was a good day for gun owners.
Absolutely. Again, talking with Dave Adams of the Virginia Shooting Sports Association. So Dave, what is your advice for gun owners right now? Obviously, again, contact those four Democrats on the Senate Judiciary Committee. Thank them for their vote. Contact the Republicans as well. But what should we be keeping our eyes on this week? Should we be looking over at the House side, at the Public Safety Committee, or do we need to be keeping our eyes on both the Senate Judiciary Committee and House Public Safety Committee right now?
Yes, keep your eyes on the committee. We'll let folks know as soon as the dockets are posted. We send out an alert every afternoon letting folks know what's coming up on the dockets on the next day, as well as those bills that were in Public Safety on Friday. They'll be on second reading today. The process is shorter. After crossover, you know, you have 3 days, where it's first reading, second reading, third reading during the first half of the session. Now it's only second and third reading. So they'll go be on final vote on Tuesday in the House, the bills that were taken up last Friday. The Senate will be the same way. You'll get 2 days of debate, and then they'll take the final vote on that, you know, that second day that they're heard on the floor.
All right. Dave Adams, again, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for all of your work. I was glad to see you there today, and look forward to keeping in contact over the course of the rest of the session.
Thanks a lot, Cam, for all you're doing and informing gun owners and letting them know what's going on with the process. And we appreciate what you do for the FSA.
Absolutely. Thanks so much. Dave Adams joining us here on Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. All right. So obviously, gun owners, you know, again, take a quick victory lap, and then let's get right back to it, because we are not out of the woods yet. We are going to see some bad bills become bad laws, unfortunately, in the state of Virginia this year. I do expect we've got some upcoming court challenges that will be taking place for any bad bills that become bad laws. But I'm keeping my fingers crossed that we can hopefully mitigate some of this damage as these bills make their way through the House and through the Senate and try to get reconciled between those various proposals. All right, let's get to today's armed citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there with a case out of North Carolina where two teenagers have been charged with the fatal shooting of another teenager. 19-year-old Santiago Alejandro Pacheco and 18-year-old James Jarquin, both charged with a murder. Jarquin charged with possession of a firearm by a felon in the death of 17-year-old Zaquan DeLoach on Wednesday. According to the Charlotte News and Observer, The pair, don't know why the pair allegedly shot and killed Deloach. She was found near a shopping center, apparently shot there, then ran to a nearby street where somebody saw him collapse and called 911. State prison records show that the 18-year-old Jarquin, who's now charged with murder as well as possession of a firearm by a convicted felon, James Jarquin, was given probation. Yeah, given probation after being convicted earlier this month for crimes, including breaking and entering, assault, and carrying a concealed weapon. And then again, less than, just a matter of weeks after getting probation for those felony charges, Jarquin now stands accused of murder. Maybe, just maybe, this 18-year-old should not have been sentenced to probation and time served for his crimes. You think he would have been behind bars instead of out on the streets, then maybe this homicide would not have taken place. Our armed citizen story today from Birmingham, Alabama. This from the Trussville Tribune there in Alabama. Police in Birmingham say a man shot and killed while attempting a robbery early Sunday morning. Sergeant Rod Maudlin, or Malden rather, says it was about 4 o'clock in the morning. An off-duty officer was working an extra security detail when shots were fired nearby. Officer ran to investigate, found the subject laying on the ground suffering from a gunshot wound. Birmingham Fire and Rescue ended up responding to the scene, transporting the suspect, or the subject rather, to UAB Hospital, where he was pronounced deceased. Sergeant Malden says preliminary investigation suggests the subject approached a person in a robbery attempt, which resulted in the subject being shot. Now, he did say that this is an ongoing investigation. He said additional details will become available as they or will be provided as they become available. But right now, anyway, this looks like a clear-cut case of self-defense there in Birmingham, Alabama. And finally, our good deed of the day from Southern California, where a police officer and a jeweler helped this man, 89-year-old David Eaton, recreate his wedding ring after he lost the ring that belonged to him for so many years. This is a great story. Apparently the ring slipped off. David Eaton suffering from cancer, and the ring that has been on his finger for, I guess, 30 or so odd years, just ended up slipping off when he lost weight because of his chemotherapy. His hand shrunk, and he didn't know when it happened, but he's not been able to find that ring. He called the police in Irvine, California, and officers actually were able to track down the original jeweler who had made that ring. They got the mold to recreate the custom ring. The police officer, who's not named, by the way, said, "I could tell how important it was to him. I could tell that he really missed it." The jeweler, meanwhile, said, "Sure, why not? I can do this." So jeweler said he got me the mold. David Eaton says it looks like the same ring. He said, "I had very little to say. I was totally speechless that he had my ring." And now, back on his hand, David Eaton has that reminder of the years that he spent with his beloved wife, Babette, until she passed away 13 years ago. So in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. To that anonymous officer in Irvine, California, thank you for your good deed, for the jeweler as well, and for Mr. David Eaton. And the off chance you might happen to see this, I wish you the best of luck in your fight against cancer, sir. Stay in that fight. That is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I want to thank you for being a part of the program today. Don't forget, you can subscribe to Town Hall Media on YouTube, and that way you never miss a program, or Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, townhall.com's podcast page. You can also become a VIP member of Bearing Arms at BearingArms.com. Get exclusive commentary, analysis, and more, as well as support the Second Amendment journalism that we do each and every day on the website and right here on this program. We'll be back tomorrow with more of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. But in the meantime, again, we certainly do appreciate your support. And if you're a Virginia gun owner, make those phone calls, make those emails, but keep up the contact and keep up the pressure. And we'll see you here soon with another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company.